Tell me a little about your background.
Well, I'm a Danish Fulbright student here at University of Illinois, and I've been studying natural resources and environmental sciences, one master for 1 year, and now I'm doing a second master in agriculture and consumer economics. So I'll be here for quite a while, and I enjoy it a lot. I graduated from University of Copenhagen, the university in the town of the Copenhagen Summit. So,
are you from Copenhagen originally?
I'm from Copenhagen originally. So that's sort of my ties between Illinois and Denmark. And when people ask me which place I love best, when I'm here I say it's Denmark, and when I go home I say it's Illinois. So I have split feelings, I think.
But why do you think the summit went to Copenhagen? Is there a tie between there and consciousness about the environment?
Well, it's actually a very good question just today, because yesterday the Economist research unit just named the city of Copenhagen the most sustainable city in the world, ahead of Berlin, Helsinki, Oslo, Stockholm, and multiple other major cities. So it is in many ways a very sustainable city compared to the fact that it is a metropolis and it has big problems with traffic and that kind of stuff.
Why is it that it's so sustainable? What impact does it have on the average everyday life in Copenhagen?
Well, you see bikes even on a day like this. Today it's pretty bad weather here in Illinois, but in Copenhagen, people, they talk about being seasonal bikers and full-time bikers. And on a day like this, at least 20% of all commuting is done by bike. On a summer day, it's as much as 40 or 50%. So that's just one thing. Another thing that is very well planned in Denmark is our heating system, heating and electricity system, because it's centralized. That gives way higher energy efficiencies on a larger scale. And just outside Copenhagen, you can swim there almost. There's a windmill standing, and there's been an offshore wind park for about 12 years now or something like that, that produces a lot of energy, electricity for the city. So there are many things that makes Copenhagen a very sustainable city, but especially also the fact that green areas are everywhere. So it's a matter of long-term planning. But why it ended up in Copenhagen was actually because I think it was a matter of politics. It is international politics, and it's the balance between Europe and the States and developing countries and China. So that's just also a part of the negotiations. But the Danish Secretary of Environment, she launched something that she called the Climate Dialogues, the Greenland Dialogues on Greenland. I believe it was in 2006, where she invited world leaders for an informal sightseeing on the ice cap of Greenland, where they went on dog sleds and talked without any press. And that was such a great success and really had a great impact on the meeting that came afterwards, that they said, hey, this is something that we have to follow up on. And Mexico actually agreed that it was not going to be in Mexico this year, but in Copenhagen, just because of this success.
And just to straighten things out, Greenland is Danish territory.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah.
What prompted you then to go back to Copenhagen for this summit? What is it that interests you about it, besides the fact that it's in your hometown?
Well, environment is very close to my heart. It's what I study. Actually, when I wanted to go to University of Illinois and applied and was accepted, it was just announced that the summit was going to be in Copenhagen. So that was a major trade-off for me. Am I actually going to go to Illinois, or am I going to be in Copenhagen? But now it turns out that I can be both places at the same time, get the great education here, and then go home for this summit. But it is something that many Danes has been looking really forward to. I believe it's, in comparison to American standards, it would have been the same if Chicago have got the Olympics. Everybody would go home to their hometown to be a part of this great thing. But my driver is, of course, mainly the interest for the environment.
how do you think the outcome will be in terms of protecting the environment? We've heard a lot of dissension amongst countries. What's your take on it? What do you make of all that?
I think if I had the good answer, I would be playing with the bookmakers to make money on it. I think there will be some kind of agreement, but it has to be seen in the perspective of the economic interest that everybody has. So all the countries have different interests, and what we have been seeing for the last 6 months, sort of the build up for it, is that they all play this game where it's about releasing information at the best time in order to promote the country's personal interest, and also even the interest groups, the lobbyists, whether it's the environmental groups or the industry lobbies. So I think it's hard to say what the outcome will be, but there will be some kind of political agreement, hopefully with some numbers on what the individual countries will be willing to reduce, but probably it will be on a very long time horizons, because what they did in Kyoto was that they were talking about a 15 years time horizon, and that's just easier for politicians.
And even with that 15 year horizon, there are a lot of countries that from the start decided not to be a part of the Kyoto Agreement, and others that have dropped out or have not followed through with their pledges.
Yeah, that is true, and that's because politicians, they're new people in office once in a while, and they have different policies and different takes on this. So I think we'll see a long time horizon. I think it's exciting to follow development between China and the States, because every time the States come out with something, China is there 5 minutes after. So I think essentially it comes down to that question, whether the game between U.S. and China is going to be successful.
A lot of attention has also been placed on India, another rising power, and they have yet a different take than China as far as complying with this.
Yeah, they are probably even more conservative than China is, but in terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. But I see India is sort of the back tire of China. They come right after and follow in the track of China. And they actually increased their dialogue on climate change just recently. So a couple of weeks ago, when Obama, he first released the first numbers that they that the U.S. would be willing to reduce by, China came out 2 hours after. India was there 1 hour after. And that is a coordinated effort, I'm pretty sure.
If you see an agreement coming out with long deadlines, how useful will something like that be in terms of what many scientists say is an immediate threat?
Well, my area of study is mainly the political side of these things. Mm-hmm. And I think you can take two perspectives on that. Are you a pragmatic that say, this is better than nothing? That was what most people, they thought after the Kyoto. At least we have an agreement. We'll see what will happen, actually, if it will be implemented. And that's sort of the pragmatic view. What I think many environmental groups will feel is that, yet again, it has been postponed out in the horizon, and we don't know what that will be. And I think a lot of people will be disappointed about that. But it all comes back down to what perspective you take. And I hope that there will... My personal hope is that there will be some kind of agreement, because that's better than nothing. And that's essentially what we need now. We need something that can follow up on the Kyoto when that expires in 2012, because it takes time to implement these policies.
So some agreement is, one, better than no agreement, and two, could be built upon.
Yeah, I think that would be my stand. But let's see. It's like going to the ball and you hope that the girl that you want to dance with wants to dance with you. And when she wants to dance with you, well, you'll be disappointed. So we'll see. It all comes down to the numbers, I think.
Anything else to add?
Well, I think... I think what makes Copenhagen particularly interesting is the fact that there's a certain momentum that has been created by the people, by the civil society this time, which we didn't see in Potsdam last year. We didn't see it in Bali for the previous meetings of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And this time there is really a momentum created by people. So Copenhagen is going to be in the medias. There are 5,000 journalists more than ever before covering this meeting. And they expect 100,000 demonstrants. So that's also...
So you see there's more general interest and not just those who know really well or insiders on the environment.
Yeah. And I think that is... Essentially, I think that that will be important for how the negotiators they actually feel when they're sitting inside the plenary hall and are debating this at the last minute. Then they'll look out and see what does the world say, and there's a momentum at this time.
The controversy going on with the leaked emails and the statistics and all. What kind of impact do you think that'll have on these talks? Is it something that's really on the side, or is that going to filter into the discussions and drive an eventual agreement of some kind?
I think there's general consensus that it's very, very unpleasant. First of all, it's very unpleasant for the scientists that it has been released because it put the rest of the scientists that actually did well science in a bad light. It did solid science, but also the IPCC has promised to get to the bottom of this case very fast. But they can, of course, not do it within the next couple of weeks. I think it will have some impact, and it will definitely give momentum to the people that says that climate change is not happening. But most world leaders has committed themselves. We've seen politicians here in the States say we need to act on climate change. We've seen that in Europe. We hear the Chinese government say it. We hear everybody say it. So they sort of already committed to this based on the best available knowledge. And the IPCC has promised to clean up this. So in the short term, it will create momentum, but I don't think it will have a long-term effect. And I think that's the consensus, what people are talking about, at least in Europe at this point.
Being somebody from the outside, how do you interpret how Americans think about climate change and preserving the environment? It's a different culture and a different attitude.
Not as much a different attitude. I think I'm in two glass balls: Urbana-Champaign, the college town, which is a glass ball that is not necessarily representative of the entire U.S., and then I come from Copenhagen, which is by no means representative of Europe, because it is a place where people are very involved in environmental issues. But I think there are differences. Especially, I think there are differences in the way that it's covered. In the medias, and I think you see that the coverage is more intense in all over Europe. So no matter if it's Germany or it's UK or Denmark, the coverage is much broader and in the scope and more intense. And I think that's one of the main differences. I think we have all of us want to do well to the environment, and the U.S. has a lot of great things here, like the research done at this university, just superb in the field of environmental sciences. And then we have other things that we do better. But you have some structural problems in the way that your cities are designed. Coming from my perspective, it will be difficult to reduce greenhouse gas emissions with sprawl and that kind of stuff.